Good evening and welcome to As the Worm Turns. You are tuned in to KVNF's live call-in gardening show. I'm your host, Jill Spears, here with, of course, my favorite gardener. It's Lance Swaggart. Good evening, Lance.
Good evening. How are you?
Doing well, thank you.
Good.
And we've got a special guest in the house. It is Mike Chamness. Good evening, Mike.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Great to have you here. Mike comes from up on Fruitland Mesa here in the North Fork from J&M Farm. We're going to be talking a little bit about, a lot about grain growing and maybe a little bit about garlic. And I'm going to give the phone numbers right now, 527-4868, 866-KVNF now, and you can email worm@kvnf.org. And just real quick before we get that conversation going, we had a couple questions left unanswered last week, Lance. I think it was Lita at Redvale that we were talking about seed catalogs with, and you had some resources that you wanted to
I just
to
wanted to
share.
Add a few more to those, and they are a local company out of Montrose, High Desert Seeds, and then the other one is Turtle Island. And this is, I mentioned High Moyne had the biodynamic and had handicapped people working. It's actually Turtle Island.
Turtle Island's the one.
High Moyne's a good one, don't get me wrong. But this is the one that has the that's biodynamic. And then there's a big one called Fedco. And Fedco does not have any, it just has descriptions. There's not many photographs at all that I know of.
The photographs are part of the fun.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, thanks for sharing that. And then we had an email at the end of the show. We had a flurry of calls, so don't wait until the end of the show. Mike's got a lot of good information. But Julie from Paonia, just we want to recap what we were talking about on lavender and how to trim that back and to be a little aggressive with that.
Yeah, it's okay to trim it back. Usually it's done right after the bloom. And all those new shoots, every single one of them is going to have a flower and lavender flower on it. So you don't want to get them long and leggy.
Right.
And
that's what people,
they'll eventually die. So, but you also, at this point, if they are like that, you don't prune them back to dead wood. You prune them back and you can still see a shoot there
sure.
or two.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you want to do with those.
Okay, easy enough. Don't be afraid to
go
for it.
Yeah, don't be afraid. And,
as Lulu would say, hack it, whack it. All right, good deal. 527-4868-866-KVNF now. Email is worm@kvnf.org. All right, Mike. You are growing grain up on 14 acres up there on Fruitland Mesa. And how long have you been doing that?
We're in our sixth year on the grains. Excuse me, and the garlic, and we produce all our own food as well as where we're coming from.
Okay. So you got quite a farm going up there.
Oh, it's a kind of a small ramshackle, and we feel we're out on the wrong,
ramshackle.
Wrong side of the tracks way up there at Crawford, but we enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. I was saying that's outlaw land.
some days.
Right on the verge of it. Yeah. Oh, good. Well, that's great. That's something you and Lance both have in common, growing your own food. And can I just ask real quick, do you have a food storage pit, or how do you make it through the winter with your food supply?
We have a small root cellar that we've abandoned due to some rodent pressure. We have a basement, a pretty nice cold room in our basement that, for most of that.
Okay. Yeah. So a lot of good things about growing grain, and why did you get into it?
We moved down here from Eagle County, knew we wanted to grow and tried to make the leap from being a small hobby garden to making a living at it, and we knew we needed to provide some income, and we threw a bunch of things against the wall, and they are all sticking right at the moment. We have
that's a good place to be.
We're pretty good sized in the garlic world, and maybe some people know of us. We do the dehydrated garlic in the grinder jars with the salts and some smoke and some flavorings, and that's going real well for us. And the grains were started from a grain restoration project.
Interesting.
Some of them came from 20 seeds, and One of my varieties put up 600 pounds this past year.
Wow, that's a lot of yield.
Jet barley, many, many years of growing. But so here we are trying to find out who wants grains and how to sell them. And our big struggle is cleaning them, getting them, I call it human consumptive cleanliness. And Greg Cranson's been a great help. And Frank at the CSU station, we're working on a new piece of equipment now, and we're getting there eventually.
Okay, so let's talk about some of that. And you brought a great offering here, which is some rolled and cleaned oats, cleaned on a white china plate. it's beautiful. It's a nice bag of oats here, and grown up at your farm.
Correct, and combined through an old antique gleaner. A2, 1967 model.
Wow. Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, I just thought I appreciate what you guys do and thought you'd enjoy some hand-rolled oatmeal. And
no, thanks.
Beautiful.
That was rolled an hour ago.
Yeah. So,
fresh really off fresh. The roller.
Yeah. I might have to go home and eat some. What kind of oats? What's the variety?
This is a Naked Hollis. It's Avena Nuda. The modern version is called Streaker.
Oh.
Some of us remember Streakers.
Yes.
It's a great fun crop.
When do you put your oats in the ground? That's just one of the grains that you grow up there.
That's a spring planting.
Okay.
Yeah, it's spring planting, and you do your barleys at the same time.
I have barleys and wheats that are both spring planted. I have a rye that I fall plant. I have seven little test plots on my wheats and barleys. I'm studying winter survivability.
Oh, okay.
Some of my spring plantings, can I move them to a fall planting and get a little better yield? But only if they survive.
Yeah.
And my literature is sometimes not real correct. So until I see it, I can't prove it to myself.
Yeah.
And so that's what those seven plots are doing.
Sure. And what's your climate like up there on Fruitland Mesa? Good sun?
Jeez, that's a tough question.
Yeah, you have your own little microclimate going.
We are a muddy mess. There's still close to a foot of snow on our fields right now.
Oh, wow.
We're right at 7,000.
Okay.
Last year, we had 28 days of irrigation water.
Oh, wow.
50-mile-an-hour hot, dry winds.
Goodness.
And that rye grew 6.5 feet tall and stood strong and was spectacular.
Wow.
Yeah. That's what's nice about your winter grains is they can be dryland farmed. You know,
And you're not just growing that as a cover crop then. You're growing it as
a cereal crop. Okay. Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
With the end game possibly being whiskey. Man cannot live by bread alone.
Rye whiskey.
Bread and whiskey. There's a couple bakers here in town working with it now to tell me if they believe it's worthy enough for their products. So we're anxious to get some market feedback. Pretty exciting times in the grain game right now.
Yeah. And you've narrowed it down to your barley, your rye, your wheat, and your oat. You started out with a lot more variety.
At one time, we had 19 varieties. Jan told me I was crazy. You've got to get smaller. You can't. And she was 100% correct. But I walked over to her garlic patch. She had 28 varieties of garlic. I said, "Dear, do you think you have a few too many varieties?" And now she's down to 12. Okay. But that's how you find out what works in your, it's called a land race. What works in your little climate.
Right, exactly.
And I started out for dry landing. That's why I went to grains at one point. Let's see if I can stretch my irrigation water elsewhere and we dry-landed tomatoes, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
That's a thing in California called dry-adapted.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
We've done potatoes and tomatoes, and we've had some success.
Yeah.
It's hilarious what you can do with crops.
Well, you're kind of proving Lance's point and recommendation to just get out there and try it. Because you figure things out, and what works for you might not work for somebody else.
I'm originally from Southern California on the beach, and our parents used to take us to Mexico, Baja, almost every 2 weeks. And I would just stare. At that time, there was agricultural fields right along the old Highway 1, which became Interstate 5. And they dryland farmed tomatoes all winter long. They plant them in the fall.
They have a little more humidity in the evening. And
well, the ocean was right there.
So, but we succeeded on Fruitland Mesa.
Wow, that's great to know.
Not very well, but we've made tomatoes. We've abandoned that project, but we did it.
So right now, I'm going to give the phone numbers.
Sure.
527-4868 or 866-KVNF now, and you can email worm at kvnf.org. Oh, maybe just hot off the press from Nicole, who has emailed us. This is about seed saving.
But
she took a seed saving workshop last year and had the privilege of taking home a few packs of einkorn wheat. Is it too late to plant it this year? And when do you usually plant the einkorn? Any tips for sowing, cultivating, harvesting, etc.? Great question. Right up our alley.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
you grew einkorn last
2 year.
Years
ago.
2 years ago?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It generally is planted as a winter grain. But if you can get it in the ground, the earlier the better. And grains have this thing, that it's called tillering. So if the more you give them space, and I don't know what it would be, 3-4 inches between grains if you just got those packages?
Yeah, 4 inches.
4 inches between grains. They'll tiller, and every tiller, or send out a side shoot, and every one of those will have also have a grain head. So you can triple or quadruple your grain in one season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And you can increase tillering through grazing. I use our local deer. They come in and hammer this rye. Yeah.
And it sends up more shoots.
I thought they were hurting me, and I was asking the deer to leave, and it looked pretty poor, and it results in more side tillering, which is a stalk or a stool in the grain, in terminology, more heads. So the deer are my grazers.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that's good to
know. Yeah, I've heard that on using an animal to actually – I've planted wide enough, but if you go and – maybe I could go and take my weed whacker.
Absolutely.
And cut them down at, 2-3 inches?
We use a lawnmower and a bagger. we grow barley for a mulch plot because it's pristine mulch.
Okay.
For Jan's garden crops.
Mm-hmm.
And we've mowed it 6-7 times. Went ahead and let it make a grain crop. We used to go out in the hayfield and mow to collect mulch. Well, the early mustards are going to seed. It's dirty, it's dusty, it's dry. So we thought, that barley grass is really wide and juicy, makes fabulous mulch and compost.
I bet it does.
And you still got a grain crop.
You still got a grain crop.
Wow. Okay, that's something new for me.
It's one of our nicer little inventions we stumbled across.
Yeah.
Just through trial and error.
Yeah.
Yep. Good to know. All right. Thanks for that, Nikki. Did you have anything to
add
about
einkorn? No, go for it.
Okay. We have a caller from Rogers Mesa on the line. Good evening, caller.
Good evening. Lance probably recognized my accent, so and I'm a neighbor of Lance. And I have a question about the barley. I've been looking for barley straw for a long time. Is that part of this gentleman growing now?
Yes, sir. I have grown several barleys. They grow very quickly. They do better for me on Fruitland Mesa. They're earlier maturing, which fits my weed management strategy. They're hullless. You don't need another piece of machinery they go right from the field to the stew pot or however you choose.
Well, my question is that maybe this is not the barley that I'm looking for, but I'm looking for barley straw for my pond because I heard that is a good...
Barley straw is supposed to keep the algae out of ponds.
Yeah.
It's a great algaecide.
So sell a barley straw when it's ready? Or
I have not been baling my straw. I'm putting that material back into my ground as a as a soil amendment. At some point, I have to stop doing that. But our soils are very thin, lacking organic matter, and that's the cheapest way for me. And some of my grain fields, after 3 and 4 years, are looking really, the soils are amazing by letting me put that back into the ground. But if I were to be baling and selling, anybody in the Voga group would probably know about it.
Yeah, there's barley out. There's barley out there, and we might be able to find you some.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Would Voga be a great?
Yeah. Talking to you soon.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, I appreciate it.
Okay, right, thanks. Thank you. Appreciate the call.
All right.
I was going to ask you, because the old grains don't like really high fertilizer. So can you comment on that?
Yeah, it's called lodging. And one of the jokes I tell people, if a frog crapped out in that field 10 years ago, that's too much nutrition.
Oh, yeah.
But that's a little bit of a stretch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, we've always grown a little test plot in Jan's garden, or we used to. That soil's too nutritious. It grows tall and falls over, and it's not ready to harvest. It lays in that on the ground in that microclimate, and we would go stand it back up and fluff it and tie it, as we were had very small quantities.
Mm-hmm.
But no, that's the wonderful part of grains is if you're breaking out new ground or wanting to expand your garden, please think of a cereal crop or a grain crop a year or two in advance. It's a wonderful rehab. You got some rehab ground.
Right, right. Ooh, I like that.
But yeah, very little to no fertilizer.
Yeah, I don't fertilize my grains. And in my soil, it's like some of them still get too big. So how I control the height is by lack of water.
Okay. Yeah, you've talked about that.
Mm-hmm.
The modern grains have been hybridized, and some of that's okay, some of it's not. But it's in order to stand short for the combine, to not fall over, to stand at a nice height for the combine, and then, of course, the newer stuff is engineered to fit on the shelf. It's not engineered to fit in your gut. But
right.
these older grains can be a real challenge with some of these issues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got a caller on the line. I'm going to give the phone numbers, 527-4868, 1-866-KVNF now, worm@kvnf.org is the email. And we have Mike Chamness in the studio with us from J&M Farm up on Fruitland Mesa. We're talking grain growing, and it's Jane here in Paonia, our friend on the line with a question. Good evening, Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
This is a quick question, I guess, for Mike. Has he ever thought about quinoa? Because he's at the perfect elevation for that, and it's such a good grain for more complete amino acids.
Yes, vegetarians. yes, ma'am. We've grown it twice, and we are now 0-2. I've spoken with Laura Parker, who with High Desert Seed, and she will tell you it's a little difficult in places to grow, but she has a very successful line of seed. But we've had nothing but poor success with it.
How about you, Lance? Have you grown quinoa?
I grew it once, and it did pretty good. And then the aphids hit it, and that was quite the struggle to deal with aphids. And luckily, the ladybugs came in and did quite a number on that. But it was just really hard to clean. And then you have to get the hole off of it to make it edible.
Okay. So
there's a saponin coating that needs to be cleaned off. And ours grew well. It sprouted in the field standing. It had a very wet fall. Mm-hmm. We thought it was about ready to harvest, and here it goes to sprouting on us. So, we've chosen not to continue.
But if people want to grow quinoa, it's almost time to plant it because whenever lamb's quarter starts to germinate, that's when it's time to plant the quinoa. So right now the lamb's quarter is germinating, but it's still way too wet to get out there in the field.
Right.
That might avoid the problem I have of we were maturing so late. If we were too late getting it in, it sounds like.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you, Jane.
Thanks, Jane.
Yep.
Yeah, we were, some friends were looking at the planting calendar the other night and realizing that, oh, whoa, we only got a few days here for some stuff to go in the ground.
Yeah.
It's like time's rolling.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to talk 527-486-81866, KVNF now are the phone numbers, but we just started talking about the whole dietary piece of grains and how a lot of these older ancient heirloom grains have a good digestible piece to them. You want to speak about that, Mike?
I wish I knew more, but what I do know is I've had gluten intolerance. I'm gluten sensitive.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the literature that I've read and studied, a lot of people like me can go back and eat the older gluten profile and get along pretty well.
Right.
There's always a percentage of the hardcore people who will not get along with it very well, but 80% is pretty cool. We don't eat a lot of gluten in our life. It's funny. That's what we grow, but we don't eat a lot. Hence the oats we love. I rolled some sprouted. Jan had sprouted some oats and dried them, and I just rolled them before I came here. She's making a granola, a carrot cake granola with it.
Ooh, yummy.
So, you know, in general, grains have gotten a real bad rap in the last couple decades. And it speaks to this digestibility of these modern grains. They're not really good for the gut. The older ones, we're hoping people can get along with better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's pretty much what you have going. All of your rye and your barley and your wheat are heirloom.
Yes, ma'am.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's pretty much what I'm growing. The rye is not quite that, but I'll be growing.
What else do you have going on?
Rocky Mountain Seed Alliance gave me two different types of barley. One's a purple one, one's a not quite. And then they gave me, I think, the rye that you might have grown, which has really long ears.
Big, big heads.
Yeah, like 6 inches or more.
Yes.
Yeah, so I didn't plant that this year. Next year I'll plant that. But I'll be planting those out. But it's still too wet to even work the ground.
Right.
I know exactly where it's going.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah, and down here in town at least, the snow is melted and on the ground. So.
Yeah.
Okay, so one of the things, Mike, that you're trying to do with your grain is really figure out maybe the whole economic aspect of it and how to take it from smaller scale production to actually making some money out of that, right?
Correct, and I'm needing some feedback from the market. And, you know, I tell people I like driving a combine, but I darn sure don't know how to bake bread. So I need those guys and the beer guy and the whiskey guy and the cooks and the chefs to help me learn that end of the business. And I know the market's there. Let's find out what they want, and I'd love to provide them some.
And you were successful, and you just touched on it earlier in the show, but maybe we could talk about that a little bit more. You were successful with your garlic crop in figuring out how to have that be a successfully economic-wise.
Yeah, that's kind of a funny story. You grow this big, beautiful garlic, but you end up with a lot of seconds and thirds that's not very pretty, not very marketable. What do you do with it? You don't want to throw it in the compost, so we dehydrated it and put it in a jar as a value-added thing, and it's taken off well. The grain wouldn't fit that exact model. You don't have seconds and thirds, although all the cleanings that come off the machinery or Lance's hand processes, it's not wasted to the system. It goes to the chickens or something. Mm-hmm. So that's the fun part about grain. You select your better seed to go to the bakery, and what came off the cleaner, that might have still had a hole on it, the stem, something, the chickens can use that quite nicely.
Yeah. You know, another thing about developing the market is the big rage is local.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You know, and even if it's, you know, going to Gunnison or going to Carbondale, it's still local.
That's local.
You know,
mm-hmm.
anything within a few hundred miles is local.
That's a big topic with us.
Yeah.
I believe let's feed our local mm-hmm. folks first, and if yeah. we have extra, we can go over the hill.
Yeah.
But in, I think there's enough people that want this stuff that's here
mm-hmm.
for now.
Yeah.
Good deal. All right, we have time for another caller, 527-4868, 1-866-KBNF now. And we've kind of mentioned it in and out of our conversation, but one of your challenges is the actual polishing and cleaning of all this grain, right?
And we're not trying to reinvent the wheel. It's been done many times, many places, but it takes money, expensive equipment that we're just not willing to go there yet.
Yeah.
So we're trying to work with the equipment we have.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 61 model cleaner from Carla Sheppy that does a pretty good job, but it's not quite there yet. Frank's machine's much more modern, based on the same principle as my clipper, some modern upgrades. So I'm hoping that's going to really put us mm-hmm. up to the next level.
Uh-huh. And can you use the same equipment for these different type of grains that you're growing, or does everything require something different process?
No, the same equipment. Mm-hmm. My combine combines it all, and I have trouble cleaning the combine, so the next product is contaminated with the last product.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a fun game there. Purity, that brings up purity issues mm-hmm. for your
right.
next planting. But the cleaning and all that, they make different size screens just for that reason. You can clean anything from lettuce to pineapples if you wanted to.
So you're just switching out some...
Right, and there's a real art to understanding that system and process, and we're kind of going that alone, just learning that there's nobody here that can really get me in the right direction. So
mm-hmm.
we're having to go through that learning curve on our own. We grew a mustard field trial, and mustard seed's very small, and we combined it, and the old-timers told me we couldn't, but I took it. Frank's got an office tabletop clipper, had the proper size screens, and I was able to clean it.
And this is mustard for mustard.
Oh, okay.
It's not for oil.
Yeah, that is small.
We again, another food in the pantry that you make yourself.
Right, mm-hmm. exactly. Nice.
Yeah. So I'm curious, you're not growing any summer grains?
Yeah.
Millet, sorghum?
I've tried the sorghums,
uh-huh.
And very limited, poor success, so mm-hmm. I abandoned. What else?
There's millet and corn.
Okay. We tried corn in the garden, and the raccoons were happy.
Yes.
And corn is one of my bad foods for me to eat.
Oh, okay. So why?
Due to my sensitivity. So we abandon the corn.
Mm-hmm.
Jan gets a little treat when we go to a potluck, and she's happy.
You're right. Makes it a treat. There you go. All right. Good deal. And you mentioned Frank, and Frank Stoneker up mm-hmm. at the CSU Extension office. And that's great to have that open again. And it sounds like you've been doing some work with them.
I really appreciate his help and willingness to let us use some of that.
Yeah,
we'll have Frank on in a few weeks.
Oh, good deal.
Yeah, I'll mm-hmm. give him a call. See when it works for him.
Well, tell him thank you for me.
All right. Yeah, he's fun to have on. And I guess thank you, Mike, for sharing all of your knowledge and how you've been experimenting and being successful with grain growing up there on Fruitland Mesa. You mentioned at the beginning of the show it makes a well-rounded garden.
Yeah.
I believe it should be a part of everybody's growing.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. This has happened with the rye cover crop. And I don't know if it's just the wet year, but the snow's come off of it, and it's dying off. Like it's, you know, like...
Your cover crop?
The cover crop.
Oh, really?
Cover crop.
And interesting.
It seems to do better on a dry year, but
I'm concerned about the same thing. I can't see mine yet, but there's instances where the winter can be.
Yeah, it just looked like they started rotting it. You know, once it started melting and stuff, it just some of it is dying
out.
So
wet.
I would hope it would come back.
Yeah.
As it dries out, but I'll be interested to hear how it turns out.
Yeah, I'm just going to leave it for now. You know, it's not ready until it's too wet and all
that. Yeah, to see what happens.
Yeah.
Good deal. Before we go, I want to let people know about what's going on down there at the Norwood livery down there. It's an heirloom apple grafting and pruning class, and it's happening on March 23rd. And you learn how to graft apple trees, explore fruit growing history in the region, and prune some fruit trees. So you can call 970-708-3972 to sign up for that. They've always got something going on down there. I love it. All right. Mike Chamness from JM Farm up on Fruitland Mesa here in the North Forks. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks, Mike.
Pleasure to have you.
Thanks for having me. This is fun.
Good. And Lance and I will be back probably with some special guests next week
because
it's Pledge Drive.
Pledge Drive.
Mm-hmm. And remember, Pledge Drive starts here tomorrow on KVNF. And support your community radio station. It's Lady Lou coming up with One Woman's Perspective next. So thanks for listening to As the Worm Turns.
Okay, thanks.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night.